Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
The best bits of Joy Drive.
Law Talk on Joy Drive.
Sally Nichols, Managing Partner at Nichols Family Lawyers. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's so good to have you back in the studio.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Now, there was a great article in The Age the other week, and it was all about people's obsession with celebrity divorces. And I know a lot of people like a bit of trashy celebrity gossip. But
no, not me.
Not you. But one of the things I also noticed was that, while searching, was this constant mention of prenups, and it seems that a prenup is a contract two people supposedly wildly in love sign before they get married or move in together, which sets out who gets what if and when their relationship ends. And it sounds like, can I be honest with you, an absolute romance killer. But
yes, but those, as we were speaking about before, and off the record, those of us who might be a little bit jaded have had some different experiences. We're all for romance, but we're maybe also for being a bit realistic and sensible and wanting control, that if the relationship sadly ends and we don't want it to end.
Which they do sometimes, don't they?
They do. Do we want to try and avoid the heartache of actually having to come and see someone like me and actually lose a little bit of control over what's going to happen with the division of assets? And even though it's hard to crystal ball, sometimes these, we call them binding financial agreements, and they apply to de factos or married couples, that can actually help anticipate what both parties think is reasonable if they were actually to split, and actually it contracts out of the family court if they're done properly. And it can be helpful for family harmony in some ways too.
So what exactly is what do we call it? A
binding financial agreement.
So we don't use the term prenup.
No, but look, it's fun because I remember the intolerable cruelty with George Clooney, shows my age, and Catherine Zeta-Jones. I was thinking about the messy agreement, the airtight prenup, and there are all these preconceptions about them. They can actually be entered into at any time during a relationship.
Right.
And so sometimes we have people who come just before their wedding and say, right, we want to sign up. If it's too close, for example, to a wedding, we might recommend don't enter into it where there might be concepts of duress, and where the other person, there needs to be an even bargaining power really to enter into these agreements. You need legal advice on both sides, and there are some important steps to be taken, but the timing's actually pretty important. So we've had people who have said, look, hold off and do it after. So even though we talk about them as prenups and you think, okay, just before marriage, that can be entered in after marriage, during
anytime.
Marriage. Anytime, absolutely.
Even if you've been, say, living with a partner for, say, 10 years.
Yes, that conversation could be tricky. Why do we suddenly want to enter into this? It could be tricky, but then, they've had their use. So there could be, I know this is terribly sad, but it could be that one partner has got a gambling problem, is hopeless.
Ah.
And I'm thinking about those types of issues. Someone inherits money and they're really saying, look, I just don't feel comfortable about it. They could be on the precipice. They could have reconciled, and they might want to actually have some boundaries in terms of reconciling and some rules to the game if they're to reconcile. They can actually be good estate planning tools too for second marriages where there are adult kids involved as well.
Yeah, just on that, let's say someone is about to inherit money. Should they do the binding financial agreement just before they inherit the money, or is it a bit risky to do it afterwards?
It just has to be disclosed. It has.
Okay.
So what we've done sometimes is for people who anticipate that they will inherit a lot of money, it's often the senior members of the family who put a bit of pressure on the young couple to enter into the binding financial agreement to exclude inheritances. And sometimes, though, it smooths the way that people think, well, they're not really a gold digger, for example, or the wealth remains within the family and avoids a costly and expensive split. But often, too, I mean, looking to the terms, there needs to be full disclosure, and there needs to be an element of parity there and, as I said, equal bargaining power.
So just on that, am I being cruel if I say I would not move in with a partner without a binding financial agreement? Like, is it just a practical tool and we shouldn't view it sort of with shame or anything like that and just say, you know what, it's a sensible tool that we can all use?
Absolutely. And it just avoids, I mean, when people are thinking it's time to end the relationship, you don't want to have agendas of, oh gosh, if this happens, look, there's going to be a catastrophe. You want to know where you stand on all elements. And the fact that there were transparent discussions and there was transparent disclosure of what you both had at the time. And it's really interesting. I don't know if we all remember the Lang Hancock, Rose Hancock. Plus, I found an old women's weekly, and this is day from 1983, my friend's beach house the other day. And I kid you not, it had Lang Hancock talking about his marriage to Rose in the women's weekly. And there was some reference to the fact that they were, everyone knew where they stood and but it was the days before the binding prenup. And, you know, I often thought if only they'd actually had prenups that could actually be binding, and the legislation didn't come in until about 2001, then maybe some of that family disharmony that happened and distrust might have been mitigated, because everyone would have known where Rose stood if they split up or as well. But they did, I mean, they didn't split up in the end, he passed away. But I think that would have been probably a smart move.
And I imagine they would have saved a lot of money as lawyer's fees. We're chatting with Sally Nichols, Managing Partner at Nichols Family Lawyers, on our monthly Your Law Talk segment about binding financial agreements. Sally, what actually makes them binding? How do they work?
Yeah, it's some of the things, the elements I've discussed before. It's actually making sure that there's been independent advice by both parties. So prior to signing the agreement, each person has to actually look at the advantages and disadvantages at the time of the advice was provided and signing the agreement. And each person has to ensure they're provided with a signed statement by their lawyer confirming that the advice was provided. And another key factor is that the agreement has not been terminated, has not been set aside by a court, for example. So there's certain really strict technical aspects to these binding financial agreements that have to be complied with.
Can they be overturned?
Look, they can if there's evidence of fraud. So as I said before, as long as everyone knows that they're giving up what they're actually giving up, say a substantive inheritance, for example, so a failure to disclose assets or liabilities at the time when the agreement was made could overturn an agreement, or if it was entered into to defraud a creditor. And you might have noticed that before certain legislation came in, there were evidence of people who were going bankrupt and they weren't really separating. They actually entered into an agreement to try and protect assets from a creditor. So that's really important as well. Also too, there might be a material change in circumstances and that could be related to the care, welfare and development of a child of the relationship. So they were very, very tight and if drafted appropriately could be binding even if the outcome would be less favourable if they had gone to court. There's been some high court decisions where people have actually, there's been such lack of parity and the terms are so unfair that often the courts have said, well, no reasonable person would have entered into this. And we've looked at people who've had disadvantages in relation to language. There was pressure put them in relation to signing immediately before a wedding or making it condition of marriage, actually. So there's just elements of duress there too.
Mark from Craigieburn says, should I be concerned if my partner recommends getting a prenup?
I think, as we chatted about before, I think transparent discussions, find out why, find out what the concern is. And knowing that the prenup means that both of you have to have independent advice and full disclosure of all the assets, it's a transparent transaction. So, no, I think it's an honest discussion. And I think often when people have felt a bit burnt, for want of a better term, from previous relationships, it's possibly something that might calm the storms, really. Mm.
Now, this is, a non-legal question, but I'm sure you've come across this lots of times. I mean, it all sounds reasonable and sensible getting a binding financial agreement with the love of your life, but how, like, what relationship advice would you give to someone who asked you about the best way to talk about it? Because, I mean, it is a difficult subject. What's the best way to sit down with your partner and say, hey, let's grab a cup of coffee and have a chat about a binding financial agreement. What would your advice be?
I love the fact that you can discuss it between yourselves. Mm. It's always great. If there's any hiccups, it might be worth actually going to see a counsellor and talk it out. A lot of people, before they actually get married, they often go and see counsellors just to talk about the ground rules, for example. And I think there's no reason why you can't do that in relation to this issue.
Got another message in saying, can you do a prenup with more than two people in a relationship?
Ah, yes. I think potentially you could, because as we might talked about in previous shows, you could actually be married and be in a de facto relationship at the same time or in a polyamorous relationship. So there is provision for third parties in the agreements. I think you probably would need two agreements each, potentially. So, yes.
Now, another one. Would it be a good idea to get someone else to be part of the conversation? You know, someone, I suppose, to help out, a bit like a moderator or a mediator?
Definitely. Family relationship mediator would be excellent in terms of going and actually chatting about the agendas and the aims and why it's actually being entered into, but also very, very important to be completely transparent.
Transparency is the key. So, if a person is still unsure or hesitant about broaching the topic of a binding financial agreement, I'm going to say bracket prenup.
Yeah.
Because that's what we know. What else would you say?
Oh, gosh. I think I'd say perhaps look at some of the talk about the history, talk about, go and see somebody who's got those social scientist skills and really work out what is the agenda. I mean, we can, I guess, talk about past relationships, talk about the fact that you want to make sure, like for some people, it might be like we've advised, say, for example, AFL footballers, they only earn, some of them, a lot of money in a short amount of time. So I know we've actually had to advise people, all the clubs have been concerned at times, that players actually just be protective of that short amount of time where they're actually earning a lot of money, that their nest egg is somehow protected. And that's such a difficult conversation for partners. But I think there's a lot of resources, including mediators or psychologists, to reach out to.
Sally, it's great advice. I'm no longer afraid of one. I'd rather have it than, and I mean, I always love talking to you, but rather than have to come and talk to you, I suppose, in a professional capacity, it'd be great to have this sorted
first. Absolutely, and that sense of control of your destiny, I think, is good. And, of course, anything that means you can avoid court or have additional conflict if you are to sadly separate from your partner, I think is a good thing.
Before we let you go, just quickly, Harry says, with the binding financial agreement, can family members interfere?
Well, they have. I think there is provision for third parties, because sometimes people might be involved in a family business, for example, and there might be actually a need for a third party to be part of the agreement, because you might be in a partnership, for example, or might be directors of a company together. So it might be that the company has to actually be a party as well. But your family members might try and interfere, and as Harry and as I was saying before, it might be that people want to not only rule from the grave when they're doing their estate planning, but they might actually want to use binding financial agreements to also make sure that family wealth stays within those family members despite marriage or despite the breakup of a relationship. So they do and can, but with anything, let's try and turn these things into a positive. That's for sure. And if, for example, you've been given something that looks really unfair, maybe that's something you need to think about too, you know.
I agree. Hope that answers your question, Harry. Sally, it's always an important chat. It's so good to talk with you. We'll catch you again next month.
Lovely.
Thank you. That is Sally Nichols, the Managing Partner at Nichols Family Lawyers.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.